Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here Wednesday, October the 6th, 2021, 17 minutes past the hour. And we've got a great day ahead here on WWGH Radio. Coming up later on this morning, we'll have On the Air with Glenn Coble. I'll join Glenn from 10 a.m. until 12 noon today. Swap Shop. No, not Swap Shop today. It's a Progressive Life today with Glenn Coble and Dr. Feynman, 12:10 until 1 p.m. Offbeat News and Trivia with Nate Redman today, 4:10 to 5 p.m. And the Trinity Baptist Church Sunday Sermon tonight from 6:10 until 7 p.m. on this station. Programming note here, tomorrow on the show, tomorrow's going to be a big morning. From 8:15 until 9 a.m. tomorrow, we've got legendary ABC News analyst and host Sam Donaldson on live tomorrow morning discussing world events. We're going to talk about the pandemic. We're going to talk about what's going on nationally in the government right now. Will the government shut down? Will we get an extension? We'll all find out tomorrow with Sam Donaldson. And also, we're going to talk about some of the other stories going on nationally that are of consequence. Is Facebook really out to be rude and nasty and hurt people? Well, we'll see what Sam has to say about that. Some great stories last week on 60 Minutes. So Sam Donaldson tomorrow at 8:10 a.m. and 9:10 tomorrow will be joined by former Ohio State Buckeye and Mayor of Columbus, Greg Lashutka. And there's a lot to talk about politically as well as with the Buckeyes, if you know what I mean, tomorrow morning. Morning, 9:10 until 10 a.m. So Sam Donaldson and Greg Lashutka tomorrow morning on this show, both live. I do want to make a quick mention here. Alan Coulter, the announcer for the David Letterman Show, died, I believe, yesterday at the age of 78. Alan was just on, I think, 2 months ago when Charles Grodin passed away and had no idea that he was ill, and maybe he wasn't ill. Who knows? 78 years old, that's kind of young now. And Alan was always a good guest. He came on when David Letterman was going off the air back in 2015 and continued to come on periodically throughout the years. What a voice he had. Alan Coulter, dead at the age of 78. And I think that's all of the announcements we need to make this morning. We're joined in studio this morning by two guys who we've had a lot of fun with over the last 3 months and will continue to have fun with. They were involved in the Great Race Pizza Shop here in Marion and in other places around the state of Ohio. One of our guests is the author of the book Three Pies Hot, and we do have copies of that book, the Gold Edition, which we will be giving away over the next few weeks. It's been kind of difficult lately with the pandemic, but I think we've worked out a new process to give things away on the air. Bob Welch and Eric Warren, thank you guys for coming back today.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for sending the helicopter to pick us up.
The WWGH helicopter was up early this morning, picked you up, brought you in.
There are some traffic jams south of the city there, so it was very helpful.
You know, the city of Marion has decided, I don't want to criticize them, but to do all of their road work now. Yeah. So not only are the main arteries shut down, but the arteries you would take to get past the main arteries are shut down. So you have to be creative right now.
Well, the helicopter came in handy. Thank you.
It's good to have the helicopter. So what is new?
What's new? Oh, wow. I don't know how. I'll start with this, but you know, I don't know how we got involved with the Florence Harding. Model or whatever.
Yeah, let me preface this in case people don't listen every day, and if you don't, why don't you? But Bob messaged me, I think it was last week, and said he had something or wanted to come back on the show, and that's no problem at all because Bob and Eric are always fun to have in here and talk about Marion history and their business, and people always enjoy it, and they bring pizza, so that's a plus too. And the pizza went over big last time. Throughout the day last time, there wasn't a piece to be found by the end of the day last time, so that is always a plus. And we do have pizza again here this morning, which is great. But you said you you either had something or wanted to talk about something, but I have no idea what it is, which is what I was telling people yesterday, and I said, I really don't. I know I've talked about some things over the last month, but take it from there. So that's where we are.
Well, and I've got several things, but I was listening to your show, you know, streaming it in Columbus there, and you were talking about Florence Harding and how she did not have, I guess, a tribute or something in town, and that maybe, you know, we could make something out of pizza dough or something for her.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you where this started. What actually happened was Florence, other than her grave site, which is next to the president over there, I don't believe there is anything named. I don't believe there are any monuments, and that's why few people really don't know what she looks like, really have no idea anything about her, so except that she was the first lady. And it's interesting to me because people are into quirky monuments. A matter of fact, this past weekend, I learned that one, I don't know if it's the biggest Buckeye candy in the country, is located in Columbus, Ohio, in a candy shop, and it's on sale for like $3,500, but people just come to see it. And there is an ice cream shop in Columbus that has clown memorabilia in it. It's not for sale, but people go there to see the clown memorabilia, and they get their ice cream. And I thought, well, we need to take somebody big in Marion history. We don't want to use the president, because everybody uses the president. He's got a lot of stuff named after him, including the high school, the hotel downtown. And I thought, well, what about Florence Harding, and what about doing something unique with pizza dough? Because last time, you had me autograph a piece of pizza dough, and that turned out good.
It did.
Yeah. So that's how that all came about.
All right, well, so, you know, we put imaginations together here, and we thought, well, we'll do a kind of silhouette of Florence Harding and, I guess, illustrate it with pizza toppings.
Oh, okay. Well, this should be interesting.
And
it's in a pizza box, folks.
It's probably good that we don't have a camera. I don't know.
we'll have to get a camera before.
But,
look at this.
But this is a bust of Florence Harding.
How about here. That?
She green eyes here. I used yellow banana peppers for her hair, because, you know, the older golden hair, you know, for that older individual.
That's right.
And ruby red lips there, red peppers there for that, and some
mangoes.
Mangoes for
mangoes.
The ears.
No, it's not getting the mango there, and the green eyes there, and eyebrow and everything. So double chin down here a little bit there, but
that is a Florence Harding bust of
a
pizza.
Bust, a real bust.
Now, is that preserved?
Not yet.
Not yet, but that yet. It will be preserved.
It is edible if you get the stomach that can handle it. But
oh, man.
I think it's more deserving of some spray shellac.
Yeah, maybe. Some shellac. Well, that's very cool.
We'll leave that here. You can play, maybe put it on display somewhere.
Yes, we absolutely will. So now we'll get on that weird Ohio tour. We'll have the pizza head bust of Florence Harding. I'm sure she'd be very happy with this.
I'm sure.
She was a quirky
woman.
I'm trying
to be very respectful about it there. And,
well, no, I think, you know, it does look like her a little bit.
Yeah,
I've seen pictures of Florence, and she's a little. She wasn't exactly a looker in her day.
No.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Right.
Now we'll have to get some shellac. How long do you think that'll hold up before we need to shellac that? We don't want Florence to smell funny around here.
Well, it already smells like banana pepper, so.
We'll get somebody to like that.
Which is a favorite topping in Marion, so I chose that in honor of her as well. You know, it looked like curly hair, but it also, banana pepper is one of the big toppings here in Marion, so I thought, tie it all together.
Are you surprised how plain Jane we've become about pizza? Because last time, and in the pizza business, we have pizza here at the station a lot. Our anniversary party and Christmas party, we always have pizza. That's become our tradition. And we have to order almost pretty plain toppings because so many people like it that way. We either have to do pepperoni and cheese, cheese alone, and sometimes we can get away with putting sausage on it. But other than that, somebody will say, well, I don't like that, or we'll have a pizza left at the end of the night.
I don't know. I'll blame it on the internet. I don't know. Let's blame everything on the internet.
It dumbed us down.
It did. But you know, I know in my family, we try to branch out. We have veggie pizzas, and we will have different toppings. You know, I like the Mexican toppings and so forth, and I've never been a fan of the ham and pineapple pizzas, but no, we always try to be a little bit adventuresome with our topping selection. But you're right, it is so much pepperoni and mushroom or pepperoni and cheese anymore.
Why pepperoni? Does anybody know the historic nature of that? Why is pizza so highly tied with pepperoni? Mushrooms not, even though it's on there.
Yeah.
Sausage is not, even though it's on there.
I can't say it's an Italian thing because the Italians don't do it that way. I mean, they're a little bit more, you know, the basil and the mozzarella and maybe the fresh toppings and not so much the pepperoni. So I don't know. I think it might have been immigrant Italians who maybe, you know, put that together, you know, in the U.S. back in the early part of the
century. Now, is pepperoni primarily used on any other dish? I mean, I know people eat it plain, but is it on anything else? You can put it on other things.
Yeah.
But like sausage, obviously people have that for breakfast. Mushrooms, people use that in salads and things of that nature. But is pepperoni a main component in anything else?
I don't think so. I mean, other than maybe, you know, sub sandwiches, you know, but I think it's gotten maybe typecast as being the pizza ingredient. And maybe we should, you know, start a Free the Pepperoni campaign, you know, and launch it into other things.
Well, you know, and I got to do this real quick. I got, you know, housekeeping here in the morning. I've got to get out the Geraldo Journal and roll through. So you listen. So you're aware of my long-term.
And we have help for you.
Well, we need it because here it is, just to prove that there actually is a Geraldo Journal. It is here every morning because I want to chart my efforts with Geraldo. Now, this started back on, what was the date? September 16th. So we've been going quite a bit with this. Now, let's see. Flip to a page. And mostly it's just did not hear from Geraldo. Or got kind of got the runaround from his producer, Rob, down there or up there in WTAM. So let's go. 10-6 didn't, or 10-5 did not hear from Geraldo. So 10-6 here today. 10-6, what is it? 21. We'll put this in. Did not hear from Geraldo. Now, people are getting sick of this, but, and I'm kind of sick of it too, but I feel now like it has to go on because I don't know why Geraldo feels like he's such a big shot up there in Cleveland. So what is the help you might be able to offer? Because I want to document this in the journal.
Yeah. Well, after Kreskin was on the show and said that he would help, you know, we got a little inspired by The Mentalist and everything. And so late one night, we got out the Ouija board and, you know, did a little seance Ouija. And, you know, we contacted the other side.
Did you?
And the medium, you know, and apparently, because we had pizza that night, you know, and so we, you know, it was topic, but the medium that we contacted actually turned out to be non-human. It was a dog. We believe it was Scotty's dog.
Who died in a... but ended up in a refrigerator.
Died in, I guess, in a hunting accident.
Yes.
Ended up in the refrigerator there
of a pizza
Finley,
shop.
Scotty's pizza shop in Finley. And, you know, and he, we were able to contact. You know, we had the pilot there... Pilot, the theme of the pilot, they're going back and forth there, and did some communicating, and thought, well, let's get the supernatural side on this. And so Mongo, the dog, is supposed to be howling in Geraldo's sleep every night.
Mongo,
B-O-N-G-O.
Oh, Bongo, yeah, Bongo.
He spelled it out.
Like the bongo drum.
Like the bongo. And so every night he's supposed to be howling in Geraldo's sleep until he's on your show. And so if Geraldo's not sleeping well, this is the reason.
Because Bongo is howling at him.
In his sleep.
Well, you know, I'll take that. Because I really don't know what's going on with Geraldo at this point. Everybody has seemed very nice up there, but it's a little shaky, you know. 3 weeks in now, and nobody ever talks to him, yet he does a show there every day.
Yeah, we figured trying to go through the normal means, the telephone was not going to get anywhere because there has been so much people trying and so little effort, you know, getting through it. So we went the other route.
Now, you know, this would be very, you could send a pizza up to him with a nice little note saying, hey, and maybe Geraldo likes pizza. I don't know what that mustache, if he can eat much pizza, but he may, you never know.
I'm afraid it'd be like a phone call that wouldn't get past the screeners.
Oh, you think Rob would eat the pizza?
Rob would eat the pizza.
You can send a copy of the book up there. He would just be fascinated, Geraldo, because apparently he lives in Shaker Heights up there, is what we all learned last week. Well, that's the Geraldo Journal for today. Did not hear from Geraldo, but the dead dog, Bongo, who ended up in the freezer of a pizza place, caused them to be shut down permanently, is now howling at Geraldo in Geraldo's sleep. So we'll see if the restlessness gets Geraldo on the show. We'll see how all that goes. All right. Now, the book, Three Pies Hot, can be purchased at the Historical Society here in town, and it chronicles the Great Race Pizza Shop. Now, where did the title come from? I know I asked that once before, but for people who are just tuning in.
It came from a parody of the nursery rhyme, Peace Porridge Hot. You know, and I had someone come in one night, might have been Eric, you know, with the next delivery, and what do you got? And I go, well, I got three pies hot, three pies cold, three pies uneven, 3 hours old, and just kind of stuck.
Now, the pizza shop was over here on Delaware Avenue.
Yeah.
Now, is it in the area where Pizza Brothers is now?
Right next door to where Pizza Brothers is, and I think there's a music shop or a musical equipment shop in there, and I'm not quite sure what that business is. We actually should go in there. And, I mean, at one point in time, they had actually drilled a fairly good-sized hole on the floor there, about 12-inch, 12-inch square, because, I mean, Charlie, he'd been robbed so many times, he said, well, from now on, we're going to have the money locked up. No one's going to steal the money anymore. And so they're going to put a safe on the floor. And they dug the hole out in the concrete and everything and took the tile out and everything and put the hole in the floor. But then I think his insurance man said, well, you know, we don't pay off on money stolen from the safe unless you use dynamite to break open the safe. Otherwise, we declare it an inside job and we don't pay off. And so they never installed a safe, but they kept the hole in the floor for I don't know how long. We kind of patched it over a little bit with a metal tile and everything, but there's a big hole in the floor there.
Now, for people just tuning in for the first time, now Charlie is he's the villain in this story. If you would read the book, he would come off as the villain. He was 51% owner of this business. He became total owner, basically, pretty much at one point, and is pretty much given credit for destroying the business. And things he did along the way were not all that kind. And it seems like nobody had a good word for this person. Now, Eric, did anybody like him? Was there somebody, you know, there are people everybody dislikes, and obviously you two were not fans of him, but did anybody like him? Did somebody in the shop say, oh, okay, I like him?
Well, he had a wife and child, so
they might have liked him.
That kind of sums that up.
Yeah.
I'm sure there were some people with ambivalent feelings, because unless you were really in close contact with him, you know, you couldn't make up a fair assessment, you know, yeah, pretty much, whether he was there or not, he was the scorn of most conversations.
Now, he was not in there whipping up pizzas.
No.
Not on a regular basis. I mean, and I was going to get into this here. One of the things he did late in maybe August and September of 78 there, shortly after Eric started, Charlie got the idea, well, we're going to be growing. We've got a store in Findlay. We're going to be opening a store in Fair Park and Mount Vernon and so forth. And he kind of launched his own informal management training program. And the push was on, you know, that fall to hire, you know, a lot of managers, so assistant managers, trainees and everything. And that's where we got really a good raft of our supporting characters, you know, came into that hiring, you know, blitz. And he would then kind of do his lecture classes after work at, you know, 2 in the morning, which, you know, we referenced, you know, a number of times. And so, you know, he'd kind of be there to instruct you throughout the night how to do things, and then lecture you a little later in the morning. So you'd be putting in a 14, 15-hour day, which was, you know, unheard of in today's market. But we hired a lot of people at that point. And one of them, I mean, maybe the people, maybe some older people in Marion might remember the Burger King out there. We hired an assistant trainee, Charlie did. I'm not going to take credit for this, but there was an assistant trainee there named Bill who one day decided to clean the Burger King floors with a combination. And this is 78, so people don't, it's fine now. I think the location's changed. I don't want to scare people off going to Burger King or anything, but he decided to clean the floors with a combination of ammonia and bleach, you know, which is not really your most healthy combination of chemicals mixed together. And so he's out there slopping the floors, cleaning them with ammonia and bleach, and the fumes are overpowering. And they had to shut the store down for that day. And so any employee there who want to call in and talk about that, that's fine. But so Bill, that was his last day at Burger King. He came in, I think, a couple days later, from the, what I gather, and Charlie snapped him up. Oh, Burger King training program. You got a lot on the ball here. I'm glad to steal you away. So he was one of the first people hired into the management training program there that fall. But and Bill had a lot of good escapades throughout his time. He ended up becoming the first manager at Fair Park for the couple months that they were open. But you know, he wanted to impress Charlie to no end. You know, I mean, everybody wanted to impress Charlie and suck up to him the best they could. And one of the things I know he did, he went out and had business cards made. You know, like he had business cards made from Mike, but Bill didn't check, you know, the numbers, everything. And so the numbers he put on Mike's business cards was actually the number for the waitress at Sambo's, not Mike's phone number. You know, and I go, and so, you know, always black him out there. And then he made some for Charlie, but then they made gift certificates, little business card gift certificates. And, you know, this entitles the bearer to one 12-inch pizza, but they misspelled it. To the barrer, B-A-R-R-E-R, to the barrer of this card entitled to one 12-inch pizza. And so everything that Bill did that was either misspelled or had big typo errors. Then he got the bright idea, actually, at one point, then to, you know, have the menu, which was a good menu on 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, shrunk down to little handy size so that people could read it. And he shrunk the entire 8 by 12 menu down to a 4 by 4 square, which something like, you know, 0.8 typeset. Impossible to read, but they had like 5,000 printed up, so they had to keep them. So he's always doing.
Well, you know what's interesting to me, learning about this and reading the book, Three Pies Hot, is that it seemed like there was great ambition and a lot of fun had with this business, but also internally, there seemed to be a lot of missteps. And I'm not really sure. I mean, I'm sure a lot of that can be blamed on Charlie, but like this would have to be blamed on Bill. Other things that went on. What do you think? It was just bad luck that the people that were hired in. What was going on?
Well, there was a lot of, you know, ambition. You know, people thought, you know, this place is going to explode into like another McDonald's. You know, and so there was a lot of ambition to succeed, but there wasn't anybody double checking anybody. You know, because everybody said I need to put myself forward and be the best. And I'm not going to have anybody else double-check me or shoot me down or something like that. And I think that was probably Bill's trouble. If he had someone, you know, double-check his business cards and say, hey, that's not the right phone number. Or look at him and say, you know, that's too small to read. You know, so nobody really double-checked anybody else for the most part. And that led to a lot of, we look at it today as being fun times, but there's more frustration at that point in time to go, how am I going to get rid of 5,000 coupons that nobody can read?
I think it's called the dumpster.
Is that? Yeah, that's a good. What is that? File 11, file 12, 13, file 13.
Although Eric has a story, what he did with the. We had another trainee, Dan Wilson. Oh, I shouldn't say last names. Dan.
Well, no, you know what? Now, hold on. I do want you to say Charlie's name, because first time you were on, we did say his name. He's since gone on to his reward.
He's gone.
But the first time we did say it,
with Mongo.
Yeah, and I think that gave people an idea of who he was, who might have known him in town. And then the last time he was on, there are a few well-known people in this community named Charlie. And I think people got confused as to who Charlie was. So I think sometimes last names do help a little bit.
Yeah.
So now, what was Charlie's last name?
Charlie's last name was Adams.
Adams.
Yeah.
Okay. So now Bill was not an asset.
No. You know, almost everybody they hired in. The ones hired by Charlie who had pseudo-credentials all washed out, and those hired by Mike, who could actually had a better read of people, you know, that they stuck around a while and they kind of flourished. And I think like Mike hired Brian and Karen, and Charlie hired Bill and Dan, and I don't know who else we had it back at that point, but Dan he got to be manager at Findlay after a couple of accidents, you know, and one point he was told to get sales up, and people always try to get sales up in Findlay, and so he printed 10,000 coupons to be distributed, you know, which is about two big boxes, you know, Xerox boxes of paper and everything there, but he didn't change the dates on the coupons, and so they were all expired by the time he printed them up, and I think Eric had found them, you know, when he was up there in one of his deliveries, and Eric had been given a job of reassembling a wooden walk-in cooler in Findlay, and Eric, he might be able to take the story from there, but he used the coupons as wadded-up insulation filler.
Again, that was the best use for them at the time. I mean, we got some value out of them. And back to your question about, you know, did anybody like Charlie? Well, initially, yes. I mean, that's why he was successful in getting the business up and going in the first place. He was a schmoozer and was very much a confidence man as far as, you know, you instantly thought he knew what he was talking about, and it took, much like some of today's politicians, a while to figure out that he really was full of himself and a few other things.
He was always smiling. He was always,
yes,
I guess maybe the word gregarious.
Ingratiating,
you know. But after you got to know him a while, you got the thing, you know, turn it off, buddy.
Well, what is an instance that sticks out in your mind where you knew, maybe liking the guy heretofore at that point, that this is not my type of guy. We aren't going to have any more even friendly conversations.
The first time there was an instance early on. Like I said, we had worked at Domino's and the Grove City store, actually. Charlie was the manager there. And Mike was assistant manager, who was training and everything at the time, and he needed help one day, you know, delivering, you know, and I was out of school at the point, and so, you know, I went in for one night and delivered a while, and then got to know Charlie and everything, and got hired on there as a driver there at the Grove City store. But Charlie, like I said, you know, the hours were long. You would go in and work at, you know, 4:30 to midnight and everything, never a break. And you'd work 5-6 days a week, but Charlie cooked the books there that he never paid overtime. You know, Domino's was a large corporation, you know, and subject to the fair, you know, labor standards and everything. But Charlie cooked it in such a way that you never paid overtime. And he always passed it off. Well, we can't pay overtime because, you know, we're small and we can't do it. But You know, and I was just 18, 19 at the time, they're learning, you know, but I figured it out, and I reported him to the Fair Labor Standards Board, because at the time, you know, I'm just a lowly little Domino's driver, I don't know any better, and they investigated him, and they reversed his practices, and, you know, made him write a, you know, actually made the company owners, you know, with the franchise at the time, write a large check, several large checks. It wasn't just me, it was, you know, half dozen other people there. And that was one more factor that, you know, led to his ouster from Domino's, that, you know, he was costing them money in situations like this. And it proved their analysis that he couldn't handle, you know, more than, you know, five stores, you know, just what they predicted.
Now, Eric, the other day I was at a pizza place here in Marion, and I saw a big sign on the window, can make up to, I believe it was $22 an hour, and on the another sign in the business, $300 sign-on bonus. So people are having trouble getting people hired in for any job right now, but people seem to be frightened to be a delivery person. What's it like to be a delivery person?
Well, I can see where they would be frightened just from the aspect of being robbed or assaulted in some way, shape, or form. I would say that would be the biggest detriment for most people. That and you can't have a newer car. You want something that is capable of handling the mileage. You don't want to waste a lot of money on gas, etc. Much like, you know, your Uber drivers or your Lyft drivers, so on and so forth. I've talked to a couple of those guys, and they've told me some pretty interesting horror stories of people they've given rides to, so on and so forth. I would say, yeah, the lack of security is your biggest one. That would be my guess.
But in Marion, in your days, there really...
Much less crime. Agreed.
Yeah, much less crime.
Agreed.
So there was not a lot of that going on. It seemed to be, I remember you saying, the big issue was you didn't get my pizza here in the allotted time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, the crime element was still there. You knew it was there. That's one reason why you didn't carry cash. But then, you know, who really cares if you're dead? You know?
Yeah.
Let them take what they want. But no, I mean, you can have some interesting experiences. One time I was delivering pizza, said, come to the back door. The light is on the back door, not on the front. And I had to walk between two houses, and it was extremely dark that night. Yeah, it was a dark and stormy night, and the room between the two houses was probably 6 foot, you know, I don't even think it was 10 foot, and I was rather, there was a bit of trepidation there on my part, and as I was walking slowly towards the back of the house, because there wasn't anything you could see, and I didn't even want to trip on anything, suddenly I found my head was about a foot and a half away from a screen window on the house I was not delivering to, and they had a very large German Shepherd who took issue with the fact that I was still breathing, and I think I jumped probably 4 foot in the air. Didn't spill the pizza though, so it ended well.
There you go. So the story ended well. Well, I just would think that delivering pizzas could be a very stressful job.
Yeah, as for the young, you know, if you want to have a bit of an adrenaline rush, if you are fast-paced, you know, if that is your thing, you know, not everybody's cut out to be a fast customer service-oriented person, you know. You find that in any restaurant you go to. You know, you have your waiters or waitresses that, you know, kind of mosey over to the table and get your order, and then there are others that really hustle, and are going very quickly from table to table, and those are the ones you know are making more money.
Well, in those days, now we're talking about late 1970s, early 1980s, how did you communicate once you left the pizza shop?
communicate with who?
Anybody at the pizza shop.
There was no communication.
No communication.
You were on your own. You had to improvise, adapt, and overcome. You had to think it out yourself. It was just like getting here this morning. You know, I was driving, and luckily I remembered some of the old streets, and we got here without a hitch, really. You pay attention. You see where the block-offs are, where they're most, and then you kind of think, well, where most likely is it going to end, you know, next intersection or the intersection after that. You know, you have to have situational awareness and, you know.
This was the time before cell phones. And
GPSs.
GPSs. You know, and so I think we quickly learned the streets for the GPS part. But if you'd get to the door and they say, we just talked to the manager and you're 10 minutes late and therefore they said to give us a pizza for free. Well, what you would do is that you say, well, you know, let's get on the phone and talk.
And use their phone.
Yeah, he'd call in using their phone, and they say, yeah, give them to them for free or give them to half price was what we said or something like that. You know, and so that was how you'd communicate back to the store.
And that was very, very rare.
And if you were out there, and we had this from time to time, you know, and people would get lost, and I can't find this street no matter what, or I can't find 237 or what, you know, whatever. And so, you know, use a dime or whatever, go to a payphone. There were payphones back then. Go to a payphone, you know, and either call the customer because their phone number would be on the ticket, or call us, you know, and we'll coach you into the spot. And so, you know, people, you know, would communicate back, you know, so they weren't out there totally blind. And we would encourage them, you know, that if you're lost and you can't find it, you know, find the payphone, call, you know, whoever, you know, or if you get to the wrong house, say, can I use your phone, you know, and not
it was a friendlier time back then. And Bob, why don't you relate one of your favorite intersections?
we would put instructions on the ticket as well. People say, I'm going to leave the light on, or I've got a big pumpkin out front there, or something like that. We'd put it on the ticket. You know, look for a big pumpkin, or, you know, and we'd put on, you know, we'd put on there, you know, light on, you know, so you could help find a house easier. You know, and we'd have some of the drivers occasionally who would, you know, then say, I'm going to 269 Superior, you know, but it says the corner here, Superior and light on, you know, but I can't find light on the map. They go, no, you know, that's not the name of the street. Marion has some unusual street names, but light on is not one of them.
Well, yeah, the people who were working there, who were making a minimum wage plus tips,
yeah.
How would you describe the vast majority of them? Were they go-getters? Were they just looking for a job at that time? What were they?
Go-getters. I mean, Spafford was one of them, than pizza there, you know, the people get hired in. John Spafford, we'll get into him later on, the guy with the wig. But they were, you know, a lot of people, you know, fresh out of high school, maybe a year of college, looking to get ahead, and maybe to get into management, you know, and we hired people, you know, from other, you know, programs, Burger King, McDonald's, you know, Pizza Hut, you know, and so we would, you know, we'd, you know, if they had that kind of training background, we'd hire them or we'd train them, but they were always people looking to get ahead. Some of them maybe not by the most honest of means, but they were always out there, you know, hustling and pushing themselves, you know, and, you know, really trying to, you know, to get their way out of, you know, out of the rut that they would otherwise be in without going to college, possibly. You know, so we were, I guess, a means of getting ahead without going to college, you know, get into management, maybe get into this future McDonald's of the pizza world or something like that.
Was there any way this business could have survived?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, like I said, you know, the Marion store, right from the very beginning and maybe up to the end, was always making a profit. You know, it supported all the other missteps. And, I talked about my brother, you know, from time to time, you know, his involvement in it was, he was a high school dropout, you know, he probably didn't make it much beyond sophomore year, and might have had to repeat that even, I don't know, And so this was his means of getting into a successful career, you know, without having, you know, that diploma or that GED or any extra, you know, schooling, you know. And he had been in a couple other fast food franchises before then, and I think kind of realized that without that piece of education, so public service announcement, get your high school degree, that, you know, without that piece of education, you know, his options were limited. And maybe that, by the way, had so many misspelled words as well, you know, I don't know. But, you know, but he knew how to do the business. You know, he knew how, you know, to work with people, and he knew how, you know, to do the resources and everything. And he had learned that through all of his years in various fast food.
And just, we've got about 5 minutes left here in hour number one. If people haven't listened before or have not read the book yet, that was really the turning point. His death while the business was up and running, and his death, I guess, could be attributed to the business. Tell that story real quick.
Yeah, he was working on renovating a building out there on the east side of Marion. I forget what street it was on. It was the old Test Food Products building. It was a Quonset hut, and they were renovating it and stripping off the floor tiles. And then the building caught fire, either through through the solvent or whatever on the floors, but it caught fire and burned, and he got caught in the fire and was brought out of it, but with heavy burns, I think about 80% of his body, and lived about 30 days afterwards. But that was the turning point, and you know, I think that's when people saw, well, the real hope, you know, for, you know, achieving anything in the business is gone. You know, the positive turn of it, you know, Charlie, with all, despite all the smiling and everything, was not a positive influence, really.
Now, coming up next hour, I see you have some information in front of you. What's on the agenda next hour?
Well, I mentioned we had something special for you, so we got something special.
Oh, it wasn't the Florence head.
No, that Florence head. That's not special.
Well, we got to shellac that thing now.
And also, you've been doing some Halloween or poems and recitations, and so we have a pizza Halloween poem for you as well, so you can
put it in the rotation.
Put it in the rotation, but no, we've got something special here for you as well.
Well, stay tuned, because that'll be coming up next hour here. So, but I like the Florence thing, because have you ever noticed that when you go to these landmarks, a lot of people, and we're going to get a picture of this, we'll put it online so people can see it, but have you ever noticed when people go to things like this, they'll say, well, that doesn't look anything like. It's more just the fact of the curiosity of it.
Yeah, it's kind of like Thomas Jefferson on the nickel there.
You know, I'm trying to figure, it kind of looks like Larry Fine from the Three Stooges. That's who it reminds me of, but the mouth looks like lipstick, so I'm willing, if we could put a pair of glasses on that, that might be Florence Harding.
Well, I couldn't cook it with glasses.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those things. But we're going to keep that around here, and the big surprise coming up, the big reveal coming up in the next hour here. So we've got a lot going on this morning here, and don't forget, I'll be on with Glenn from 10 until noon, and we're going to have Glenn. I don't think Glenn has tasted this pizza, so when Glenn comes in at 10 this morning, we'll get a taste test from Glenn, and all kinds of other stuff going on here at WWGH Radio. Again, don't forget, tomorrow morning, Sam Donaldson and Greg Leshutka, and I believe we have a special guest on Friday. I can't tell you who that is yet. Maybe tomorrow morning, and it's not Geraldo. We haven't heard anything from there. That's right, but there is a dog, a dead dog, keeping him up at nights now. So we may hear from him. Maybe Geraldo will be on Friday. It's hard to tell at this particular point. I do want to remind everybody, and we have information on the Christmas bus tour. We do have information on that. Got some information from the mayor yesterday. So we will probably go over that today during Glenn's show. And also, apparently there's been a big, I don't even know what to say yet. It's a big brouhaha in the local political game here in Marion when it comes to the upcoming city council races, and we'll talk about that this morning at 10 o'clock with Glenn Coble. So stay tuned to this station. We've got weather and news and other announcements coming up now. 15-minute break.
It is an amazing night here, and it's great time, and tonight, to win the opener, does that give them momentum, in your opinion?
Yes, I do. I believe it. I mean, they've been waiting for this all season.